Hey, this is Michael Bridges from Lost and Found, and you're listening to Dorkness to Light. And you know I love the name of that podcast.
Dorkness to Light, hosted by Alan and M. Middleton.
We aim to explore what takes place at the corner of theology and geekology. Episode 18, Back to the Mailbag.
Welcome to episode 18 of Dorkness to Light. This is our show where we take a look at pop culture in terms of where those stories intersect with concepts in religion, faith, theology, and spirituality. And this episode is feedback time, because our last episodes have all been really long, or a special event, or a particular topic, a DVD commentary.
So we've been pretty bad at replying to our feedback for the show. But we're going to change that all with one episode. Because we have awesome listeners who regularly send us awesome feedback. So we're going to spend this episode going through that entire big old bag of emails, faxes, and notes.
On episode 15, we talked about the album Thaumatrope by the little-known band Mara in the Mainsail. A lot of the comments on this episode were some variety of, I've never heard of these people, but that episode sounded really cool.
Yeah, it's about right.
One of those was from Dave McElvaney, who says, an interesting episode on a topic I wouldn't have guessed I'd be interested in, which is what makes this one of my favorite podcasts. Thaumatrope doesn't really sound like my cup of tea musically, but I very much enjoyed your discussions of the themes in this album, made, as you say, by thoughtful, deep, and insightful people. A description that wouldn't be amiss for the two of you.
Aww, Dave is such a sweetie pie.
He says, I will visit the Mara in the Mainsail website and give a listen myself. Thanks.
Gene Hendricks from the Hammer Strikes commented on this episode as well. Alan and M, that was an interesting episode you did on Thaumatrope. I have to say, though, it seemed like it was a bit on the depressing side.
I mean,
yeah. Not really my kind of music, Gene says. I understand what they and you are saying, that redemption is a process, but yikes. Okay, it's possible that that process is not as dark and deep for everybody as portrayed in the Thaumatrope album, but
you know,
I've got a feeling they were going for yikes.
Yeah, mission accomplished. Yeah, I always like to say that, you know, the healthiest people are the ones who are most interested in the dark and macabre and weird. Like, you got to be comfortable with that to be a healthy person. So I'm going to take how much we love this album as a good sign.
Exactly.
Not that we have, you know, serious mental health needs.
And in the interest of equal time, Gene said that if you wanted some folk stuff from his side of the spectrum, he would suggest checking out Norsewind. They have a pretty traditional sound, and as you might expect, sing about the gods and spirits of the Norse. Some toe-tapping music there, Gene.
We are big fans of folk music from literally any geographical area, ethnic background, continent. If you've got music of the people, we are probably into it.
There you go.
We also heard from our good friend Vera Wild, and be warned, this is a long one. Dear M and their father.
Hey.
I'm liking this already. I've just wrapped up your coverage of Thaumatrope, and it made for high quality listening. I don't think I have to tell you that I've never heard of Mara in the Mainsail. I also think, based on previous correspondence, that you can probably guess I'm one of those folks who avoid music marked Christian. Maybe not because of disagreement with the message, but because that would generally be considered mainstream Christian music, and it's just not for me. much in the same way you wouldn't find me browsing the country music aisle at a record store either.
I get that.
However, I do appreciate that a number of the artists I enjoy are people of faith, which is likely a contributor in the music they're making, even though that isn't overt in their art, at least not as far as the marketing goes. Hello there, Lindsey Stirling. See also the Mumfords and the Civil Wars and Flyleaf, who started off as an official Christian band and sort of
21 Pilots
reverse crossed the Tiber.
You and Mom went to a Lindsey Stirling concert.
That was a good time.
And I don't know that we've mentioned this on the air, but we've mentioned it to your roommate before. We don't know Mumford and Sons, but we know their parents.
We know Mumford's mom.
We have met the grown adult Mumfords. It's a church thing.
She continues, there's also a number of songs that I quite enjoy with overt religious or spiritual imagery. There's Audience of Souls by Emily Smith, or The Sea by Carbon Leaf. I'm going to have to look these up later. I think the band I enjoy that bumps up against this most is probably Blind Guardian. Though they seem to approach Christianity largely as a mythological point of reference they can pull from, which they also do with Tolkien and the Trojan War and Norse mythology, etc. But like I said, that's basically stuff I kind of brush up against from time to time. I do, however, always have an appreciation for an album that is itself a journey and not a mere collection of songs. The seminal work of this nature for me was Pink Floyd's The Wall, which was an almost continuous rotation for me during all of high school, which wasn't exactly my happiest time. I think everyone's go-to high school album.
It might be.
It says something about those dark years of your life.
People just want to sing We Don't Need No Education over and over. It's
and
kind of custom built for your high school years with that refrain, I'm just saying.
It is. There are some great individual songs, but over the course of the album, the things that cause the protagonist to build a wall around himself until that wall basically crushes him is, I think, a monumental achievement. Sadly, so many albums that try for this kind of thing end up really hokey or ham-fisted. I'm looking at you, Tommy.
Oh, shots fired.
But this sounds like you found one that managed to do it really well. And while I can't promise that I'll actually purchase it, your passion for the work was a delight in and of itself. You know, it is free streaming on Spotify.
There you go.
As is Bone Crown, their follow-up. Just saying.
Just saying.
She continues, I hadn't really been planning to feedback for this one until M got to the point about swapping the last two songs, so it paints a picture of the journey not ending, but the next leg now beginning. I think that speaks to a personal and spiritual truth that many people have a tendency to not want to deal with. We all think if we can just achieve a certain thing, then that means we've won. A certain job, a certain amount of wealth, a house, kids, a dog, a picket fence, some moment of religious revelation, etc. But the journey of life is not made up of destinations where you then get to say, I'm done. And yet people try to make it that way. I got what I want, so this must be happiness. I've become what I was meant to be, so I must be done changing. But this will almost always make for a restless spirit, and I think there's good reason for that. And now we get to have a return of one of our favorite sections, Sacred Origins.
Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
My own spiritual journey has been one pretty much devoid of formal faith. But if there's anything that I've learned, it's that personal evolution never ends.
Yes.
When you hit your next goal, it may feel like somebody moved the finish line. Again. And for a lot of people, that's frustrating. I've come to love it. I get to where I'm pretty sure my next step for the acceptance and completion of me is, and then I say, okay, what's next? What I am now is not what I was 5 years ago, and it's not something I would have even conceived of 10 years ago. But that doesn't make what I was 5, 10, or 20 years ago a waste of time.
That is a great personal insight, by the way. If other people could internalize that, I think that would put many a person on a path towards some improved mental health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some more personal fulfillment. Mm-hmm. I honestly want to grab this next sentence and just like cross-stitch it up on something. I was what I was meant to be at the time. I wouldn't have been able to be what I am now at any point in time before this, nor could I be it in this moment without what had come before. We keep moving along, but the road isn't just a commute. Our reality is now, And if we view our now as a commute, we won't appreciate it while we live in it. We obsess over where we're going, but at every step in the journey, we are, in fact, complete as we can be in that moment. Today is not a step towards tomorrow. Today is complete.
Mm-hmm.
I am complete. What I am tomorrow may be different, but that doesn't make my existence today so much unbaked dough. I think a well-conceived and executed album is one of the best ways to relay personal journeys, because it's as much about emotional truth as it is about narrative, maybe more so. So thank you for sharing this one with us, complete with your thoughts on it. If the journey never ends, then the destination doesn't matter, but what we do on the road is everything.
Mm.
With love, Vera Wild, gender-fluid vlogger and untamed spirit.
I wanted to say on a personal note, or on a separate note, Vera posted recently that she became nervous because an overtly religious person started following on social media, and this just gets her to tense up a little bit.
Yeah, sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop of like, okay, I'm sure you might be cool,
but
I've got to be prepared.
And then shortly, both I and another Christian, Tim Price, assured Vera that we are both big fans of hers, just as she is. And from our old buddy, Isaac in Michigan, Professor and M, thank you. Every good show did a musical episode at some point in its run. Buffy, Psych, Leverage.
Yes!
And Dorkness to Light is no exception. I will admit, I was a little worried when I saw this was an album review. I thought, this isn't really my style of music at first. But upon listening to the album in its entirety later, hey, good Isaac, good on ya. I really enjoyed it. The themes are very potent in the lyrics, and the music informed the mood of the song very well. Thank you for exposing me to something I wasn't aware of and encouraging me to think outside the box of cookie-cutter contemporary Christian music, quote-unquote. I will certainly add this album to the rotation and look forward to more recommendations. Isaac in Michigan.
Well, hopefully he also listened to our audio feed episode, which was basically 2.5 hours
of
recommendations of bands you definitely have not heard of.
Isaac, obviously, as you heard, we love that album and glad that sharing it at least sold one copy of it.
Yes.
I mentioned this to M, and you did the happy dance.
We said in that episode that we were basically 100% stealing from the podcast long play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to get all of this feedback that says that we kind of successfully did it, because most of the bands that they cover, I am not at all interested in. But I gotta admit, they're good albums.
Mm-hmm.
And when you listen to someone who loves it talk about it, it's really interesting.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that we were able to effectively, sort of correctly steal that energy. The episode after that was the Prince of Egypt commentary.
Mm.
And we got a good amount of feedback from that. First up, from Bex, the host of the Redeemed Otaku podcast, which we have shouted out to before. She said that our Prince of Egypt commentary was awesome. This episode made me appreciate this movie like never before. It's a really good movie. Like, I feel like I always have to say that to people. Like, have you seen Prince of Egypt? And they're like, oh, yeah, that's one of those DreamWorks
like cartoon
movies.
Ones. Yeah, it's okay. Whatever.
And I'm like, what?
I want to diverge us a bit here, but I will bring it all back around to Bex and Redeemed Otaku.
Okay.
So there is a podcast that I've mentioned before on this show that I've had to break up with.
Ooh.
We've talked about our struggle to find communities that we fit into, whether it's being too liberal for the conservative shows or too conservative for the progressive places or whatever. And the one here I'm talking about, which I will not name, is a case of me being too conservative for a progressive Christian podcast. But the sort of breaking point for me was not that we disagree with things. I'm cool with that. I think it's a great way to learn, expand your horizons, and all of that. You know, last episode we talked about the great diversity of views held by folks at the Audio Feed Festival. And We did comment how strange and unusual that was to bring so many different people literally under one tent.
Right.
Or a series of tents.
Yeah, and especially when you talk about something like either politics or religion, mm-hmm. it can be difficult to find places where conversation is really encouraged. Mm-hmm.
So again, it's not that me and this podcast disagreed, that we had sort of different views, but it was clear that I, again, not me personally, but people with my grouping of views weren't really welcome, and that show wasn't a place for debate or discussion. And that's okay. They never said that it was. But still, I just had to let that show go. I kind of felt like they didn't like me.
Yeah.
You know? Now, of course, if you've been a part of online fandom the last few years, you know that this is not unique to religious podcasts or groupings, though obviously it does appear there as well. That's the context I'm talking about is within religion, but you know that sort of approach is—it's
pretty common.
It's pretty common,
so. Unfortunately, common.
But I do want to mention the Nomad podcast here as well, which is a progressive Christian interview show from England. We listened to an episode, I can't remember if it was on the way to or from Audio Feed, about the woman who was engaged in craftivism and gentle protest. And that was one that just was from a perspective, a Christian perspective, that was so different from mine. And I felt like I learned so much, and it was so cool what she was promoting there. And that was a great episode. And I've listened to the Nomad podcast for years, and they have sort of talked about, they're really not into the type of church that we go to or some of the types and beliefs and practices, you know, where I'm at. They're just a lot more progressive. But they've never made me feel unwelcome.
Right.
You know, I get the feeling that they don't agree with me. I don't agree with them. That's cool. But we'd still be mates.
Exactly.
We could converse. I can listen to them, and I come away with feeling positive and stretched as opposed to feeling beaten down.
Yeah. And I think that's just an important, you know, it's important for everyone on the listening side. Mm-hmm. You do not need any obligation to stay a place that you are unwelcome. Mm-hmm. That if you don't, and it's a thing that a lot of people aren't even aware of, but when you are unwelcome in a place, you can feel it instantly. Mm-hmm. And it's sad. It's unfortunate. And that's why it's important for everyone to sort of take time and actually listen to mm-hmm. other people. Mm-hmm. Because you might even not be aware of how you are making other people mm-hmm. feel unwanted or uncomfortable or disliked. And it's important to try and mm-hmm. get to know our fellow people. Like, you gotta make that effort.
And to bring it all the way back around to Bex and the Redeemed Otaku podcast, that show is way more conservative than I am.
And it's also very Calvinist. So if you've listened to either of us, that's a pretty big divide.
Those certainly can be. But again, I've never got the feeling that Becky or the co-hosts dislike folks who aren't on the same page exactly theologically as they are. Disagree, debate, of course, sure. But again, I don't come away from listening to that show feeling disliked either.
Right.
So big ups to Nomad, Redeemed Otaku for being on sort of different wavelengths for me, you know, within the realm of Christianity, but being on different wavelengths than me, but not making a big deal about that. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
We've talked about it before, but both of us are so far out in the weeds that like for us, we literally don't have a choice. Because there is one religion podcast that sounds like us, and it's this one.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, like,
pretty much.
We have to learn to get along with other people, and it's nice when other people learn to get along
with
us.
Exactly, exactly. Now, getting back to the feedback, which is what this episode is supposed to be about.
This episode is about discussion.
Ah, there you
go.
See?
I
feel welcome now.
It's communion.
Ah, hey. I see what you did there.
From Dave McElvaney, I'm going to go out on a limb and suppose that maybe, Perhaps it seems like M might like this movie just a little bit.
There's a chance.
Maybe, maybe. You picked up on that? Excellent. Excellent detective work, Dave. Thanks, as always, for an interesting episode. I have never seen The Prince of Egypt myself, but I'm pretty fond of the book it's based on.
Okay.
Okay, that's good.
That's pretty
that's
funny.
That's good. I will have to watch this for myself now, since it sounds, at least in some ways, better than the Ten Commandments. Now, I will say this.
Well, we have to do a compare and contrast at some point.
It's shorter.
That does help.
So, for good and bad, it is shorter.
Aaron Henley commented that this is one of the better Ten Commandments movies. They admit they took some liberties with the story, and believe me, they did. Zipporah filling in for Aaron springs to mind. The animation and CGI really brought the events to life in a way we hadn't seen before. The parting of the Red Sea and seeing the whale backlit by the lightning, that gets us every time.
It should be a metal cover. Like honestly, like an audio feed band needs to like get licensed to that image and just be like,
and we'll talk about the whale shortly.
Oh, yes.
Aaron says, now I have Deliver Us playing in my head. Time to hit Redbox right after I finish up the episode.
Excellent.
Exactly.
Surprising no one, about 50% of my workout playlist is the Prince of Egypt soundtrack. Like, I just want you to, if you've never done it before, just take a moment, you know, hit the weight room. I sent the pestilence and plague into their house, into their bed, into their cow, upon their sheep.
Lift. Lift. Lift.
It's intense.
And Mike Staley reminded us, after listening to the episode, that there can be miracles
when you believe.
Gene Hendricks had quite a few thoughts on this one as well. Alan and M, something in your commentary of Prince of Egypt struck me while listening. Moses was a terrorist. He went to the governing body of a country and said, give me what I want or I will kill your people and your economy. He then went on to follow through with that threat. Is this a case of the end of Hebrew slavery, justifying the means, Egyptian death and a ruined economy? It's an interesting question to ponder, if nothing else.
Yeah, I replied to Gene that the Old Testament is loaded with questions like this, a lot of them worth pondering.
He then replied and said, not just the Old Testament. Remember, Jesus flipping out on all the temple moneylenders? That's certainly a do-as-I-say-not-as-I-do moment for the pacifist rabbi. Now, I think both of us would take a little bit of
umbrage?
Yeah, umbrage with the term pacifist rabbi.
I don't think that's the whole story.
And I'm going to be honest, not to speak for Jesus in this exact context, but I don't think he would have actually been terribly down with that label. He did come to bring the sword. Both of these are cases of rebellion. You know, it's what's the difference between a terrorist and a revolutionary, you know? It's like, okay, how much is the social order worth defending? And I think that both Moses and Jesus would say when people are being enslaved and murdered.
If you're in political power or in religious power, so in Jesus's cases, Rome or the Hebrew leadership, if you're in either of those positions and someone comes along proclaiming that the kingdom of God is here, both of those groups have reason to worry.
Mm-hmm. When you show up and start, as you said, literally flipping tables in the temple, some people are going to have problems with that.
Might take notice. So.
The good Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. did say that riot is the language of the unheard. Mm-hmm. So, not saying they were asking for it, but they may have been asking for it.
Great conversation. That's what I like about our feedbackers like Gene and everyone else. They give us things to think about and things to talk about.
Clinton Robison of the Coffee and Comics podcast posted a short article about one of the great moments in Prince of Egypt. And it was a post of a post of a post, so who knows who originally put this together, but he told us, I'm sure you may recognize this as one of the most epic moments from The Prince of Egypt, where you see that super majestic whale as they're crossing through the Red Sea. However, I have noticed one minor issue. Whale tails move vertically, and that tail moves horizontally. That is when it hit me. That's not a whale. That is a shark. That is a megalodonian shark in the Red Sea. The shark is going to eat the soldiers. That is cold DreamWorks.
See, again, perspective. I thought that was awesome DreamWorks.
That was metal.
Maybe that's where we have a slight disconnect.
Maybe so.
Oh, wonderful. So that wraps up our feedback on those two episodes. And before we get to feedback on our most recent episode from Audio Feed, we did get some audio from our recent visit to HeroesCon, the comic book convention in Charlotte, North Carolina. There, we talked to the guys from the Faith and Fandom podcast and book series.
You hold it or
either way?
Okay, I want to hold it.
All right. So, Faith and Fandom is a book series of essays on faith and geek culture primarily. We have 5 volumes out, and the basic concept is to find spiritual parallels in the fandoms that we love and enjoy, and to put it out there in a digestible means for fandom culture and geek culture. So, basically, the things that I watch, read, play, and enjoy, and I annoyingly stop and take notes when I'm doing it and annoy my wife with it.
I hear you, brother.
So, but that's kind of the heart of it. And we travel around about 28 Comic-Cons a year doing this, and just trying to be salt and light and encouraging presence not only to the con attenders, but also to other artists alley and vendors and promoters and cosplayers, and to try and be that encouraging presence in the geek culture and climate. And we do the books, we do shirts, we do podcasts, we do all those things, but that's about it.
Right. And the place to find Facebook is probably?
Facebook is our primary, and that's facebook.com/faithandfandom. Our podcast is faithandfandom.podbean.com. We try to go to pretty much every Comic-Con in the Southeast that we can make it to. But I'm a full-time pastor, so I only get like 5 Sundays a year to miss for this stuff.
There you go. Right. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
And we're back to talk about episode 17, our experiences at Audio Feed 2018.
Now, we need to start with our Facebook preview post, which somehow, I'm blaming you.
I fully accept this blame.
Turned into a discussion of Striper fandom.
All I did was go into the gift search function of Facebook and type in Jesus Metal. And the first 4 gifts were all Striper.
And you picked the best one.
So I'm not saying that the Facebook algorithm for gift searching is perfect. But that was a pretty good pull. That was a good pull, Facebook.
So, Chris Ouellette, Pat Sampson, Scott McGregor, and even my old college buddy, Tad Keener.
The internet is great.
All chipped in on that conversation. It's probably a story for another day, but Tad and I went to see Striper sometime in the 1986 time frame. Story for another day.
There is also a podcast called Crowdfunding Christian Music, which is about crowdfunding.
Wait, don't tell me. Crowdfunding Christian Music?
Yeah, actually. That's a very good catch. We got a comment from their Twitter, Good Patron, about my idea for bringing cash for the bands. And their reply was, love your idea for supporting the artists. Everyone should bring fives with them to music fests.
So your idea got big thumbs up from a podcast which is all about supporting indie musicians. So I think that is that affirmation. That is affirmation. And again, from our friend Dave McElvaney.
And number one best Tumblr follower.
What a wonderful experience for you, and what a wonderful episode for your listeners. I'm not a music fest kind of guy myself, generally speaking, and my musical tastes may not be as broad as yours, but it's fun hearing the two of you talk about what you liked and how much fun you had. Some of my favorite moments from this episode. One, the shout out to Bob Fisher as, quote, the only other person who may have a Good Guys cassette. I'm an avid Bob Fisher fan and thrilled at any mention of his name on any podcast. Two, hearing in the description of the diversity not only of musical styles, but of the people attending, the phrase, hardcore normals, coming from M's mouth. It just made me laugh.
And it is accurate.
Three, in talking about the artist propaganda, M used the phrase, aggressively and intentionally compassionate. I don't know if that phrase was M's or props, but I think it would make an exceptionally apt church motto.
He said something
in that ballpark, and you may have adapted it a little bit or rephrased it.
I actually think it's an adaptation of a McElroy-ism about being intentionally open-minded and harmlessly joyful.
Ah, okay.
So.
And from Dave, number four, the discussion of stories about animals in Christian and other literature. I grew up in Catholic parochial school, hearing and reading many such stories, and I've always enjoyed them. Not entirely in the same vein, but I wonder if either or both of you have read Anatole France's novel Penguin Island. That's a no for me.
I've heard of it,
okay,
but I could never get a plot summary of
well,
it.
Well, spoilers.
Dave finally summarized it, and now I understand why no one could explain what it was about.
It's mainly a kind of satire on European history and culture, but it begins with a Christian monk, mostly blind and deaf, who ends up on an island of great auks. He thinks these birds are pagan natives and sets about baptizing them. This provokes a debate in heaven about whether birds can be validly baptized or not, and how this should be handled. The result is that God transforms them into humans, and the rest of the novel is about the history and culture of this strange island. Thanks, as always, for the fun and the learning opportunity.
Thank you, Dave.
You just gave us a learning opportunity.
For finally teaching us what Penguin Island is about. Back to Isaac from Michigan, who you remember we convinced to buy an album by Mara and the Mainsail. Professor and M, man, did I ever need this. I am 20 minutes into your podcast and I've looked up all the bands. I'll listen to them in a minute, but I had to send you this email. I've got to go to one of these festivals just to experience something like this. I've become increasingly irritated and mostly bored with CCM.
That's code for contemporary Christian music to anyone not in the know.
And the modern, increasingly less like Jesus, modern church. Some of this is a bit out there for me, but I do like checking out new things, and I will definitely be looking these groups up. I was really proud of that episode. Like, it feels like really weird and pretentious, but it did kind of feel like an important episode. And the amount of good feedback that we've gotten on it has sort
that
of helpful. Proven that to be true. I'm glad that this got out to the people who needed it.
Now, I think this applies to Dave and Isaac and others, just to make sure. We should have put a warning label of some kind, like, not all bands are for all listeners.
Yeah.
But I do want to give another podcast a shout-out.
Mm-hmm.
There is a podcast called The Antidote. I think it's The Antidote Radio. It's a radio show out of Canada, an hour a week that gets then turned into a podcast. And the idea is that everyone knows that most Christian music is pretty terrible.
Mm-hmm. Or bland. Or both.
Yeah, and that this show is the antidote for that type of thinking. And it really is pretty good. And he's been doing it for a number of years, well over 300 episodes of it. And I am very slowly working my way through the back catalog. But I want to give them a shout out because Dave from the Antidote Radio podcast was also at Audiofeed.
Excellent.
Did an Audiofeed episode.
Let me just say, not surprised.
And then since then has done episodes featuring the Pretty Bads and an episode with the Jericho Harlot. And those are, again, part interview, part playing three or four of their songs. So if you want to, again, test out at least a couple of the bands from audio feed, check out The Antidote or The Antidote Radio podcast.
I didn't actually get to hear Jericho Harlot for more than 4 minutes. I'm going to have to grab that episode.
There you go.
Next, Christopher Ouellette desperately needed some follow-up information. Wait, there is a band that did a George MacDonald theme album?
We explained. Yes, the classical harpist Timbre.
That's spelled T-I-M-B-R-E, and then last name C-I-E-R-P-K-E.
You can tell why she goes by Timbre.
Yes.
But she put out a double album last year. Was it Sun and Moon?
And then, of course, he had to follow up and ask, oh, is it Day Boy and Night Girl?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. And, of course, he knew that.
I mean, I don't want to out Christopher too much, but I believe both of his children are named after Lord of the Rings things. So the whole George MacDonald Inklings, that
Tolkien
sort of thing is
literary
that
corners.
That is up his alley.
Yes.
And again, from Vera. Dearest Middletons.
Vera.
I just finished listening to your coverage of the Audio Feed Festival. I enjoyed it quite a bit, precisely because pretty much all of it was outside my wheelhouse. I'm spiritually inclined, but deeply non-committal, as a matter of choice.
Man, I feel that. I feel that deep in my soul.
And I don't think that I've ever been to a music festival. I've been to the occasional festival that had a musical component, like the annual Maritime Festival around here, where my partner read pirate books to kids in between a singing pirate's musical sets.
Okay, hang on.
There's a lot in that last sentence.
Okay, do you think we can figure out, like, a hotel swap thing? Of, like, Vera comes with us to Audio Feed next year, and I can go with her
to the Maritime Festival?
Get me out of this landlocked cornfield!
But Vera says, but I haven't been to a festival where music was the entire point. I'm not sure such a thing would be for me, but it was fun to hear about. Regardless, I don't have a ton more to add that wouldn't be reiterating my reply on your episode of Thaumatrope from earlier in the year.
Or 17 minutes ago.
Earlier in the episode. So I suppose this will be on the shorter side for once. Sounds like you both had a lovely summer. Sincerely, Vera Wild, gender fluid vlogger and burlesque queen.
A Twitter follower named Algernon, who is also at AudioFeed, agreed with my assertion that the Bible is pretty freaking metal. And also, AudioFeed and cornerstone musician, longtime acquaintance of yours, Harry Gore, said, great podcast, and thanks for all the shout-outs. He also invited us to interview him next time we're there.
Yes! Now, we mentioned the Twitter. We have recently added the Twitter account for the show, @DorknessToLight. Very straightforward. Did want to thank some folks who have interacted with us over there, in addition to many of the people we've already mentioned in this episode. Luke Dobb of Dobb Creative, Nathaniel Wayne, the nerd of Godcast. That's not bad.
That's pretty solid.
Luke Giaconetti, Chris from Bat Books for Beginners, Randy S., novelist Darvey Steinke, Al Sedano, the podcast Gal Walks Into a Comic Shop. That's not a bad name either.
It's also quite solid.
Christados, Billy Hogan from the Superman Fan Podcast, Levi the Poet, Laura McElroy, Conrad II, Marin the Mainsail, Nate Allen.
Those last bunch were all musicians and also very nice people.
And they follow back on Twitter, so that's always good. John Wilkerson of the Wired Homeschool, Christopher J. Warden, Heavy Metal Church, John Vinilas of the Two Geek Soup, Good Morning Bedlam, that's a band, Geek Devotions, Karen from Between the Pages, Drew Dixon of Love Thy Nerd.
Okay, like, guys, guys, you're showing us up. Like, you gotta stop.
Darkness to Light isn't bad, but some of these are pretty good. Pastor Chase Thompson and Neil Stanifer. But there's still more room. Feel free to follow us on Twitter. And that is the end of the feedback, but we do want to give some shout-outs and some updates as well.
We wanted to give a shout-out to former guest Peter Franson from the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, producer of the Spirit Blade audio dramas. Mm-hmm. He has two things going on that we wanted to take some time to mention. First, he recently reached the milestone of episode 500.
You know, I mean, that's not bad. I think 18's pretty good.
Yeah.
500's okay. I mean, eventually he'll get to 18, right? Is that the way numbers work?
Right. he took that opportunity to rebrand his podcast so that his name was consistent all across the website. So if you are looking for his podcast, it is now called Christian Geek Central Podcast to go with the website that he runs, Christian Geek Central. He's also turned his attention away from audio dramas, even, you know, the works that he was doing with adapting Pilgrim's Progress or producing original songs. Now he is doing adaptations of the Bible in audio form with full text readings, original scoring, sound effects. So, sounds pretty
cool
interesting. And we wish him the best of luck on that project. I have not really like a shout out, but just sort of a like a book rec that I wanted to throw out here really quickly. So I've been on kind of a classic fantasy kick for a couple of months. So I grabbed some Shannara books and a couple others that had sort of been on my reading list, stuff from like late 80s to early 2000s. And one of the books that got recommended to me in the you've downloaded six of these, you should pick up this, was a book by Lois McMaster Bujold. She's a very prolific sci-fi and fantasy author, especially in the late 80s and early 90s. But I was recommended a book called The Curse of Chalion. I feel like I unfortunately did that really snobbish thing of she's releasing a book every 18 months. Clearly she can't be good at her craft sort of thing. As opposed to like she writes a book in 18 months. Like she's clearly very competent.
Yeah. You can't shoot every novelist through the George R. R. Martin lens.
No.
That's
the Stephen King lens.
Exactly.
Like not all authors. This particular one was from 2000, 2001, something like that. One of her later books. I just loved it. It had really good, you know, world building, of course, very well written. It did a really good balance of being sort of like quote unquote historically accurate, but not getting so bogged down that it was like incomprehensible, that people just used turns of phrase that made sense, even though some of it was archaic and some of it was modern. It was very well handled.
There's a skill in that world building where you can get the context without having to explain and explain and explain.
Exactly. And one of the areas where her world building was just shining was in the religion. And of course, anytime anyone's doing any sort of religious world building, I'm interested because it's an interest of mine. But she did it really, really well. She had a very defined pantheon, which had all of the gods as roles. Father, mother, sister, brother, and then the bastard. And had sort of like a pentagon of divines that sort of covered everything. And the way that people talked about the religion, the way that the religion influenced their daily lives, I really liked the way that she did it. The amazing part is that she talked about sainthood for like half of this book. I'm not going to go into too many details because I do want everyone to actually read it, but the concept of a saint, what makes a saint, and how you recognize a saint are major themes. And they don't show up until about 30% of the way through the book.
Okay.
And then basically the rest of the novel is about that. So,
interesting.
As with many fantasy stories, there's a lot of politics and, you know, marriage pacts and movements of allegiances between different fantasy kingdoms and all that sort of thing. But there is this additional layer on top of it of the way that the gods interact with humanity, very specifically.
Interesting.
Because I like Tamara Pierce, but I always felt that the way that she did her gods was kind of lazy. And in The Curse of Chalion, when the main character meets another character who is a saint, an actual literal saint, they have this whole big discussion about what the gods can and can't do, and it turns into a really good discussion of free will. Not just the world building. The actual theology in this book is really solid. So it's not a Christian fiction book. Like, the religion that they're talking about is, you know, polytheistic, and it has its own rules and regulations, and it's all within this fantasy setting. But talking about the difference between priests and saints, and making saints a thing that happens in this world, just a fact of life that a lot of people don't know about.
That's an interesting take.
It was really, really interesting. The metaphor that they used, which I really loved, was that in order for the gods to work in this world, they needed a vessel. And like a vessel, you have to open yourself to the god and empty yourself.
Oh, wow.
So the god can pour into you so that you can pour out. And when the main character talks about that, he's like, well, why do they have to do that? Like, why do they have to? They're gods. Why can't they just do what they want? And the saint says, because matter is as great a mystery to them as they are to us. Like, that was, I'm not saying it was transubstantiation, but it was transubstantiation. Like, how do you unite the material and the immaterial? And it has to be through someone who is willing to transcend those boundaries. And in this case, a lot of times it has to do with death, that you have to be willing to martyr yourself. When asked about this, the saint character says it is not a question of virtue, because the main character is talking to him and is like, but you're just a guy. You had me come into your house and you offered me wine. Aren't you supposed to subsist purely on water and unleavened bread? Or like you live off the existence of the gods, and
what's up?
Why are you like making me food and giving me alcohol and like sleeping in a comfy bed and all these things? I thought saints were supposed to be devoid of the material and all this stuff. And his reply was,
We're not Gnostics, we're saints.
Exactly! that book is so anti-Gnostic, it's beautiful. Anyway. He says, saints are not chosen because they're such good, pure, perfect people, or because they're so removed from the material world. It's not an excess of virtue, but it's a disinterest in vice, because vice holds no interest for you when you are so addicted to the presence of the divine.
Wow.
Like, it's...
There's a lot.
It's great.
There's a lot in that just in the 3 minutes you spent talking about
Let
it.
Me
That's
just...
That's awesome.
It's a big, nice, thick
big
book.
Big fantasy novel.
I got it in audio. It was 17 discs.
I cut on.
So,
right.
It's a big, thick, door-stomper fantasy novel, and it is highly recommended. The way that the religious structure works is really interesting, and then the way that sainthood and the relationship with divine beings, it is just incredible, because it is something entirely different. That it is a calling, but it's a calling that you have to start.
Right.
And so there's some really good stuff about what is your call to action and what is your destiny. You know, do you have to follow the will of the gods? And again, not to get too spoilery, the big revelation is it's not that your destiny is to help the gods. It is that your willingness to let the gods work through you will accomplish miracles. It's nice. Good stuff. It's very good stuff. Highly recommended.
Name and author again?
The Curse of Chalion, Chalion.
By Lois McMaster Buchold.
Yes.
Or close to that.
Buchold.
We had another listener update we wanted to go over here, and that is that earlier in the year, we read an email from faithful listener Robert Ludwig about his wife's recovery from leukemia. Well, things went a bit downhill after that, and if you remember a few vague tweets about a listener asking for prayers for his family members with a serious illness. That was Robert. And he's now allowed us to reveal that was him asking for additional prayers for his wife, Heather. And he sent us an update and asked that we share it with the listeners of Dorkness to Light. This has been a hard year for my family. Here is some background on why I appreciate all that the Middletons have done in getting the word out and continuously offering prayers and support. In early May 2017, my wife Heather was diagnosed with AML, a form of leukemia. Of course, we were shocked by this news. 2 years before, she had a different health scare, but had come out of that fine. This one was different. We were at a loss as to what was going on. We put our lives in God's hands. She was officially diagnosed on Friday afternoon and reported to the hospital Monday morning to start treatment. This was especially hard as she's a high school English teacher and couldn't even say goodbye to her kids at the school, at least not in person. In the middle of treatment, there was a problem with her liver, most likely due to the chemo, but we got through it with thoughts and prayers from our family and friends. As of October 2017, she was in remission after some more recovery and was able to go back to her passion, teaching. And that is where we were when we last shared that email 3 or 4 episodes back. And Robert continues with the 2018 update. Unfortunately, the remission did not hold. The Monday after Easter, she again was diagnosed with leukemia. Since it had come back so quickly, the next step to try to beat it was bone marrow transplant. That was the day I reached out to Professor Allen and asked him if he could post something for me while keeping it anonymous. I just didn't know how to fully handle what was going on. Granted, I still don't, but I think I'm handling it a little better now. The reason I asked to remain anonymous was that I didn't know at the time if I could fully put myself and my family out there to the online community, and I just needed some help and some time. From listening to the professor and M, I knew I could trust them to help and keep things quiet till I was ready. I was right. Off and on, I've let Professor Allen know how things were going and thought now would be a good time to let it be known that my family still needs prayers, and I've appreciated them from all that have sent them. I also won't deny that I was afraid to be known since there's so many others out there that need prayers as well and may not have the tribe around them that we have. But back to the story. On May 31st, my wife received her bone marrow stem cell transplant. After going through the process of getting back into remission and finding a donor match through BeTheMatch.org, the next step occurred. The strange part of the transplant is that it was like she was receiving blood. Stem cells had actually been harvested from the donor and brought to her in a cooler and then hung as if she was getting blood products. The stem cells knew where they had to go in her body. It's really kind of amazing.
Wow.
Since then, there have been some hard days where the chemo was hurting and she felt lousy, but she feels okay most of the time. In fact, since her release from the University of Iowa Hospital in late June, there have only been 2 ER trips and 1 stay of 3 days in the hospital. Her main doctor throughout says that this is pretty good and everything's progressing well. Unfortunately, the downside is of all of this is that my wife cannot teach. Due to not having much of an immune system, she needs to be kept away from all germs as much as possible, especially viruses.
And yeah.
Yeah, that's not school.
Schools, public libraries, any form of, any teaching place that's going to have small children that don't know how to wash their hands,
or not
teenagers
germ
who don't
free.
Shower terribly often. Yeah. Robert continues by saying there is an outside chance that maybe towards the end of the school year she could go back, but we're just taking each day as it comes. I know she's struggling right now since school just started and she can't be there, but there will be next year. Throughout all of this, our son Peter has also been amazing. While he does pick up some of my frustrations when things go bad, he has been amazing in how well he's handled all this. Our summers have been mostly spent in the hospital or just at home. I know he's struggling because we haven't had as much normal time in the summer to go out and
just be in the summer, just to have a summer.
Yeah, and some of the parenting discipline has been more lax, just out of necessity. Hello, Xbox. But he's been very good. He's learned a few things about nursing and helping to draw blood. Who knows? Maybe he'll become a nurse, a doctor, or a lab researcher to get out there and help stop cancer. Both my wife and I love him very much and wish things could be different, but we all get through each day as best as we can together. Anyway, this became longer than I thought it would. I want to say thank you to the Middletons, to the Dorkness to Light listeners who've prayed for us, and for our friends and family who've prayed for us, helped us, and given us more than we could or have even wanted to ask for. Thank you again from Robert Ludwig in Iowa.
Yeah, you're not quite sure what to say after that. Except that for all the problems and I talked about earlier in the episode about finding community, maybe there are places it can exist.
Yes. And we're grateful to help facilitate that.
Be a part of that, absolutely. You know, sometimes there are things that you think just like go without saying, but sometimes you need to say them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So our friend Luke Giaconetti has responded to what he has seen in like toxic fandom recently and toxic social media by introducing a simple phrase to the sign-off of his Earth Destruction Directive episodes. And I've said it the last couple of times on the Comics Reading Journal, but I think it applies here as well. It's just three simple words. All are welcome.
Wherever you come from, in the big tent of the Christian world or in the wide outside of that tent, or if you just don't really know where you belong yet, you can come here.
All are welcome. We love interacting with listeners, receiving feedback from listeners, and also we love just knowing that you are out there listening. That means more to us than we can say.
And so to each and every one of you, may the Force be with you.
And also with you. While you're waiting for the next podcast episode, check out our websites. DorknessToLight.blogspot.com contains reviews, essays, and other similar ramblings.
And DorknessToLight.tumblr.com, which contains some of that material, as well as top tens, cool photographs, memes, and religious puns. We also run a general interest comic book podcast network, Relatively Geeky. That content can be found at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com.
Let us know what you think of this topic, this episode, or this podcast in general. Feel free to send your thoughts to us at dorknesstolight@gmail.com. We would also appreciate any ratings or reviews left for the podcast in the iTunes store to help like-minded people find us.
Our intro, outro, and promo music is by Anderson Kale. Check them out at andersonkale.com or search iTunes to purchase their music.
Thanks for listening.